You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and I'm your host. Greetings to all the tribes of Israel who are the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Scandinavian, and Nordic peoples, our brothers and sisters around the world. Yippee-i-yo-tai-yay, that's what I have to say today. The title of this message, ladies and gentlemen, is The Mysteries of America. I'm going to be reading a little later from Manly P. Hall's book, The Secret Destiny of America. There are several sections of this book that will show us some things that are very interesting and discusses the rights of man, the man who designed the flag, etc. We'll find that out a little later. But before I go on with that, I'd like to discuss some various topics. The first topic is rats and mice. You say, well, why would we discuss that? Well, I had a friend a few years ago who I don't see anymore. I should say whom I don't see anymore. Because I'm in a different location. And we were discussing the Jews. And he had had a problem with mice in his house. And he likened it to this, and I thought it was very, very good. He said, we have to go to work all day long. But the mice have all day long and all night long, every day, 7 days a week, etc., to figure out how to stay in that house. But we only have a small amount of time in order to find out how to get them out of your house. And I think that that's what goes on with the Jews. You see, they don't have to really work. And so they have all day long to think up all these nonsense things that they think up. We want to get them out of our countries, but they have all day long. You have to go to work. And besides work, you have to take care of your children. And then besides that, you have to take care of your property. And besides that, you have to have a little entertainment. So we don't really have the time to figure out how to exit these rats and mice from our country. But they have all day long, all week long, all month long, all year long to figure out how to stay here and make a nuisance out of themselves, which they are a nuisance. However, the very traps that we set for them are beginning to trap them. And the traps that they set for us are beginning to trap them. And I'd like to thank Yahweh for that very thing, because he is the one that's answering prayer. People, we've got to get on this prayer thing. We've got to pray imprecatory prayers. We must be praying against this enemy. The rats are now fighting amongst themselves. The rats are leaving some of the countries. The rats are on the run. The rats are in fear, as I prayed right on my show and been praying recently, that Yahweh would put them in fear. The rats are in fear. And I pray that Yahweh would put them in such fear that it would paralyze them and cause them to have problems making decisions. though they may have all day long to figure out how to stay in our countries and in our lives, may the fear of Yahweh paralyze them so that it doesn't matter how long they have, that they will just be in a perpetual state of fear. Now, one of these things these rats are doing, and remember what I told you, I want to keep hounding on this fact, is the German film that showed the migration path of the Jews to all of our countries. That same migration path was taken by the rats. These rats were not in our countries. And I know you find that hard to believe at the moment, but I think you should see that film I keep telling you to see, The Eternal Jew. You will be amazed when you see the parallel between Jews and rats. Remember, they call them rat-faced Jews. Because they look like rats, and they act like rats, and they do the same thing rats do to our race. Anyhow, let's talk about Hegel. But not this time. We won't be talking about the Hegelian dialectic. Not the one we always talk about. We're going to talk about another one. And these rats are employing this and have been employing this for a long time. It's called problem, reaction, solution. Now, I want you to pay attention very closely here, because this is how it's done. This is how it's been being done. And this is how they'll try to pull it off in the future. And actually, right now, they're trying to pull it off again. Okay? They want to take the guns away from Whitey, the true Israelites, who don't commit very much gun crime at all, if any, practically. Only the ones they invent, usually. So, they have a solution in mind. And that solution is to take the guns away from the American population. So there's their solution that they want to make happen. But they need you, Mr. American, you, Mrs. American, you Americans to agree to it. They need you to react to these shootings that are going on all over the country. And to call out, you see, what they're doing is they're bringing these blacks in, and the blacks that they have here as well, they're handing out guns to them. And I guarantee you this is the truth. I don't even really have to prove this to you. I mean, where are they getting all these guns? So what they're doing is handing out the guns to the blacks. And the blacks, of course, are a very emotional people. And what they're doing is they're shooting Whitey, and they're shooting each other. And now they're playing these games that they always play by showing fake news stories on shootings. Because they want a reaction. They're working on your feelings. I keep telling about your feelings. I keep telling you people about your feelings. That these people operate on feelings. They promote feelings. Everything they have to do, everything they promote has to do with feelings. And they're looking for the reaction. And the reaction is this. There's so many shootings. See, by putting the guns on the street and giving them to the blacks and handing them out to the blacks all the time, there's now they've created a problem with guns. What is the solution to the problem? Well, we'll take the guns away. But that means you too, Mr. White Man. And you too is who they really want to take the guns from. So they have to make you react to the problem. Oh, yes, there's shootings all around. Right? And now you're supposed to fear and say, oh, we've got to get them to take the guns away from all the people, and then there'll be peace. There'll be no more shooting on the street. You think so, huh? You think so? Let me give you a little piece of advice. If they take the guns away from Whitey, Whitey will no longer have any protection, but Blackie will still have the guns. Do you understand that it doesn't matter? Either way, Blackie's going to have the guns. The only difference is White T will have no more protection. What do you think, the cops are going to come to your house in time? They're down at the donut shop. And besides, if they knew it was blacks committing the crime on you, they'd probably be so fearful they wouldn't want to show up and just come and clean up. They'd become the cleanup crew. Oh, look what happened. So problem, reaction, solution seems like it's a viable solution. You see, but the problem is this solution they already had in hand was to take the guns away. So by creating the problem of passing out the handguns and all the guns to the blacks and creating the fake news stories and maybe a few real gun shootings in the meantime as well, they're looking for your reaction. They're looking for your approval, because everything is done in this world by you approving it, by you signing willingly. So, you definitely don't want to react. Just let the blacks keep killing themselves, and they will kill some white people in the meantime. However, the blacks are dooming their own race. This is the judgment of the blacks right now. You're witnessing it live, and Yahweh's watching all of this. You're watching the blacks doom themselves. You see, what's going on is we as the Caucasian race are the woman, the seed of Jacob, the woman who has been persecuted, not the Jews. We are the woman. And the other races are being tested right now on their treatment of the woman. The woman has been a blessing to all nations. The seed of Jacob, the seed of Abraham, has been a blessing to all nations. Now, in return, these races are being tested now. What are you going to do? Will you bless the woman? Or will you hate the woman and persecute her and try to kill her? They have chosen. Most of the races have chosen to go with the Jews and Hillel, their father, because of shekels. See, but this is like a grand chessboard. What you're watching here in the world going on, this is going to be interesting to you because I want you to think about this. There's a grand chessboard on the world, and there's white and black pieces at this point on this particular chessboard. This is the way this works. So we're in America on this grand chessboard, let's say. Blackie goes out and kills one of Whitey. Now you take a white pawn off the board, right? But the black piece gets taken off the board too, and either gets killed or goes to prison for life. thus neutralizing two pieces off the board. So what has been going on, and this is all right from the Jews, mind you, what has been going on is the black population has been taken off the board and put into the prisons so much that their race is decreasing. I know it looks like there's more of them, and that's because that's what part of this immigration is about. It's to replace that black population. As they lose some of them, and they use them to work in prison, but of course they don't work anyway. That's one of the biggest jokes to me, to think of black people as slaves, like as if they were going to do some work, like as if, you know, that's the last person I'd have for a slave is a Jew, okay? The second last person would be a black. Why do I say that? Because they would eat more than the work that they would produce. It's a joke to me to think of blacks as slaves. What are you going to do with them? It's a waste of time. However, they're ending up in prison and they must be doing some kind of work. I don't know what that is. But as they kill each other here too, because they hate each other just as much as they hate whitey. And they even said, as I said in my news show, we're going to kill you too, big nose. I get a big kick out of it. I love how everything is coming back to bite the rats. The traps that they set are coming back and snapping right on their heads. So they replace these black people with vile black people from other countries. And what happens? The race keeps going down. Right? Can you see what I'm trying to tell you? So Blackie is doing himself in. And Mr. Farrakhan can't see that. He says, go out and kill Whitey. It's time for Whitey to be judged. Go out and kill Whitey, he tells them. Now, this is supposed to be a minister. Yeah. Okay, so that's what's going on in that arena. Now, I will tell you that that's the exact same thing that's going on in some of the other countries with the Muslims, and here as well. Because there's an article that I just read that talks about the UK. And it's very interesting that it says 42% of inmates in top security prison are now Muslims in the UK. So, here's what I believe they're doing. Now, this could seem like a wise thing, too, in its own way, okay? But here's how I put it. We are the guinea pigs of immigration. Governments are endangering our lives to catch these so-called terrorists. You see, it's a lure to bring them to America and to bring them over into all these countries. And what's going to happen is that they're just going to end up in prison. Now, what's the downside of that? The upside of that is, yes, we get them off the streets. But the downside is you are a guinea pig. You as a population are guinea pigs in the meantime. So there's going to be ramifications. You see, if you're a guinea pig, you'd understand that. However, there's also other ramifications. It's this way. Rather than keep these blacks and these Muslims in their own countries, we bring them here endanger the populations, and then put them in prison where we have to pay the cost of them staying in the prison. You see, folks, that doesn't work. The best way to do it is just to leave them in their own countries. Now, the Muslim thing is a little different because, you see, the Muslims really aren't much of a threat because they don't even have any tanks. They don't have any weapons, any real, I mean, they have, you know, things, but they don't have, they just have a like people on the ground. That's all they have. So they're an easy enemy to conquer. The blacks, on the other hand, belong where Yahweh put them. And they're causing all countries of the world problems. They have proven that they can't live in white civilization. They are very unhappy here. Very, very, very unhappy here. Do we hate them? No. But I certainly don't like their actions, and I'm tired of looking at them. And I want them to go back to their own place. They're doing America no good. They never have done us any good. And they never will do us any good. And they're not equal to us. They never have been. And they never will be. Now, does that anger you? Well, if it does, then you're not very intelligent. Because you can pretend this and pretend that and pretend this. You can't pass laws to make people equal. It just doesn't work. Affirmative action, it doesn't work. I have to call it as I see it. This has nothing to do with being a racist, so let your feelings, check your feelings in at the door and listen to the facts and forget about your feelings because we're not discussing your feelings. We just can't live together. That's the plain, simple fact. We weren't meant to live together. We never will be meant to live. We'll never be meant to live together. It's just not in the cards, as they say. We don't want to live together. I'm not going to pretend that I do. I've had enough of it now. I want to see it over with. I want them to go home. I don't care if they think we stole the land from the Indians. Yahweh gave us this land, the tribes of Israel. I don't care what your feelings are about that. All I know is Yahweh gave us this place because this is where the tribes are to regather in the end times. So the rats have brought a flood upon the woman. A flood of aliens. A flood of economic disaster by bringing the aliens. A flood that is told about in the book of Revelation. That flood will be swallowed up by the earth, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not worried about it. However, I don't like it, and I'm not going to pretend that I like it for your feelings or for your ideals. The Jews promised to bring utopia through the UN. This UN utopia is a lie. This is not utopia. This is a horror show full of zombies and walking dead. Now, I'm going to keep hammering on this as well. This is another fact. Is that the Jews are right now backpedaling. And I'm warning you of this because, you see, the Jews have now They are now the so-called truth movement, as we saw with Alex Jones, the admission there, that Alex Jones is a Jewish-run ship. Jews do not tell the truth. Unless Yahweh makes them tell the truth in a book or something like that. Jews are not conservatives who care about America and care about America's destinies. So why are they telling the truth all of a sudden? Some of the truth, let's say, because they're certainly not telling the truth. I've said this before, and I want to keep reminding you of this. Because they're trying to show themselves as redeemable. See, you can't show yourselves as a wicked people all the time, like the blacks are showing themselves to be right now, and expect that people are going to think you are redeemable. So the Jews, always playing both sides of the story, are backpedaling. They're trying to make some of their people tell you that that it's wrong what's going over there in the little land, the pretend land of Israel, the land of the rainbow, you know, because it is the gay capital of the world, Tel Aviv, for real. They're trying to show themselves as redeemable. But ladies and gentlemen, sooner or later, you're going to figure out that these people are actors, okay? They've been actors through all of time. I told you one of the things that they know how to do is they're chameleons, expert chameleons. They know how to blend in into any nation of the world, because Cain is a wanderer. He has no land of his own. So the seed line of Cain has been in every nation of the world and has been able to be cowboys. Some of them look like American businessmen. Some of them look like Englishmen. Some of them can be Frenchmen. Some of them can be Saudi Arabians. Some of them can be like the Young Turks. Some of them can be Australians. Some of them can be Germans. You get the idea. And I don't mean they can become Germans. I mean they act like Germans. These are actors. And an actor means to be a slave. This is why they're so good at peddling things, you know? They are merchants, so they know how to sell something to you. It's an act. They call it a spiel, right? I want you to understand that when they're on the top, they are the most cruel of tyrants. But when they are under you on the ground looking up, they can become full of tears, crying the Holocaust. And again, it's to evoke your emotions. That's what I'm trying to make you people understand, is that you've got to forget about the emotions. When you go to discuss the Holocaust, you want to discuss facts. But right away, they will bring emotion into it. They don't want to discuss facts because they already know the facts. They already know it's a lie. They're not stupid. They made up the story. So what they do when they don't want to discuss something is they begin that the either the anger or the crying or whatever it is, it's emotion. And they will not discuss the facts. No way, no how. They are actors. Hollywood is full of Jew actors. Wall Street is full of Jew actors. You get what I'm telling you? Salesmen, Jew salesmen are actors. Once you understand this, you won't allow. You see, I'll give it to you this way. Thank you, Yahweh, for putting this message together, because I just put this together, or I should say Yahweh just put this together 15 minutes before the message was coming out. I was going to start right on the mysteries of America. And it amazes me how it all gets put together. So, actors. You see, when Yahweh goes to judge people in the end times, do you think he's going to let you get into heaven if you cry a boatload full of tears? Do you think that your emotion, that the judgment of Yahweh is going to have to do with the emotion? That he's going to begin to weep and cry and say, oh, you poor Jews. Oh, all the things you did. Oh, I'm so sorry. Look at the tears that you're crying. You may pass into... No, 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 no. How's that for 100 no's? No, 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 no. No way. Yahweh knows... He's not going to be going by his emotion as the judge. Yahweh will sit there and he will, I'm sure that, you know, he feels things, but he's not going to allow that. You see, they're not going to fall on the ground and start saying, the Holocaust, the Holocaust. He's not going to go for that. That's, you might as well just stand up now, stand up and forget all about the act, because that's not how the judgment's going to be done. I bet you never really thought of that, huh? You think you're gonna cry and you're gonna start speaking and all these things and say, try to defend yourself? I'm not gonna try to defend myself when I stand up to Yahweh, stand up and it's time for my judgment. I'm not gonna say, well, I did this and I did that and I. No, I'm going to just let him do what he's going to do. Because you're not going to talk your way out of it, Mr. Jew. And Mr. Chavez Goy, you're not going to talk your way out of it either. And Judeo-Christian, with your Jewish version of Christianity, you will not be able to talk your way out of it. This is how important it is for all of you, all of us, to get it together with Yahweh now. Repent. Get real. Forget about your emotions. And get serious with Yahweh. And the more of us that do this, you will begin to see Yahweh work more. I'm watching prayers be answered. Is it because I'm special? No. But I am really trying very hard to obey and to do what I can for all of you and for the kingdom and for Yahweh. And of course myself too, I would say. I mean, you know, I don't want to end up where the Jew's going to end up. Would you? So it's time. So we need prayer warriors. We need people that will repent and pray imprecatory prayers against this enemy, against the evil of the land. That's why I think of my brothers and sisters, part of my repentance has to do with I care for my brothers and sisters, and it's very necessary if we're going to reach them. So get it together. Leave the Jewish version of Christianity, Judeo-Christian. Have nothing to do with it anymore. Go on a search for the truth. Seek ye the truth, and the truth shall set you free from the bondage you have been in. And get on the road back to Yahweh. Now, why do I say these things? Because the world must be around at least 80%, 85%, maybe 75% sellouts. Sellouts to the Jew. Sellouts to the devil's kingdom, to Babylon. Do you want to be a sellout, ladies and gentlemen? Do you want to be known as somebody that would sell out your race? Like Judas sold out Yeshua for 30 pieces of silver? And do you know what he did with those 30 pieces of silver? He never got to spend them. He bought a field and he hung himself. He never really spent them on anything that he would want to spend them on. Is that how you want to be? To end up? Do you want to be a sellout? To the Jew and to the devil? Do you want to be a sellout and really never? I told you, if you make a deal with the devil, look at our Shabbos Goy military. They're not getting their part of the deal. I already explained that. I'm not going to explain it again right now. I will in the future again, because I know how forgetful Manasseh can be. We need to be reminded. It's time for the sellouts to turn about. It's just not worth it. You're not going to get, if you made a deal with the Jew and the devil, it's not going to pan out. Get it? Pan out? Oh, boy. Okay. Well, let me move along here a little bit. Okay, here's one thing I would like to speak about, is there's plenty of money for the elderly, but they tell you they have no money for the elderly. Now, the elderly have worked very hard for us, and they've supported us throughout their lives. But there's no money for the elderly. They should be living posh lives for the ending of their lives. It should be relative ease rather than starving to pay the oil bill. Now, we've got money for immigration. They said to bring those people from Africa, it could cost $11,000 to $14,000 per immigrant. And somebody's paying that money. Now, you know it's the Jew, but they're not using their own money, are they? That money could be going to the elderly. How about CERN? Here's some devil's activity. $13.25 billion spent on CERN. That could be going to the elderly. How about building cities in China with no people in them? That money could have gone to the elderly. How about spraying chemtrails on a daily basis worldwide? That money could have went to the elderly. Or how about keeping prisoners in prison at so much per year? I've heard 70,000, 75,000 per year. I've heard other people say, whatever it is, that money could go to an elderly person. Why would you want to keep alive a killer? Why would you want to keep alive a pedophile when Yahweh forbids it? Why do we have so many prisoners? Because we don't obey Yahweh. You don't see this happening in Saudi Arabia and other places. If you steal something, they'll bring you right up in front of the public and chop your hand off. Do you think that might curtail stealing a little bit over in those countries? Oh, yes, it does. So, by keeping prisoners, you're keeping them and giving them 3 squares a day. They're probably not doing much work. They have cable TV, etc., etc., etc. And they have heat, don't they? And probably air conditioning and all kinds of amenities. But the elderly are having a problem paying for their heat and their food bills and their medical bills. What has happened to common sense in this world? What has happened with people? Can we no longer think rationally? Okay, the last thing I'd like to speak about is forcing food companies to make healthy food. How can we do that? Very simple solution. Don't buy it. If you stop buying those processed foods and the foods that are bad for us, then, if nobody's buying it, soon they'll take it off the market. But somebody's buying it. And the first thing you'd want to look for in these foods is high fructose corn syrup. Yeah, high fructose corn syrup. If that's got it in there, don't buy it anymore. I was buying candy bars, I'd buy like, 2 or 3 a week or something like that and space them out or whatever, have a little here, a little there. I began to look at all the products and I find out that every candy bar practically, I can't find one that doesn't have it in it. So I don't buy candy bars anymore, that's all. So if everybody stopped buying the candy bars, they'd have to take the unhealthy nonsense out of it and at least make it reasonable. And that would go for all kinds of foods. This is especially done in drinks and things like that. I go into a supermarket and I'm looking at the drinks and they've all got this in there. Now, you don't want high sugar either, you know what I mean? But what I'm trying to say to you is just common sense. I guess we just don't have common sense, so just keep eating that stuff and they'll make more unhealthy food and soon you'll be dead. But if you do have common sense, anytime you see that in a product, don't buy the product. If the product sits there and sits there and sits there, they'll have to rethink things. See, I happen to know that food companies could make food that is healthy for us. I happen to know that they could make all kinds of things. I just saw an article that says that 90-something percent of the beef in America has fecal matter in it. And that doesn't have to be that way, you see. I'll bet you wouldn't have found any of that kind of stuff 60 years ago when more white people were in charge of the food industry. Now, of course, I blame the Jew for this too. But I happen to know that the other races, not very hygienical. They don't wash their hands after going to the bathroom. Oh, you say that there's somebody that does. I know somebody that does. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I heard all that before. Thank you. Okay. So that's what I have to say about those subjects. I think that that was something interesting to think about there. Many, many things that are interesting to think about.
Insufficient data. You are a man, I am a machine. Other than that slight difference, we have a great deal in common. There is a dangerous alien among us.
Affirmative.
A familiar behavior pattern is detected.
Danger, danger, Will Robinson.
I am not programmed for fear. Due to worn conditions of memory bank, compliance impossible.
You're listening to EuroFolkRadio.com. A voice for European people worldwide.
Let's move on to Mr. Manly P. Hall. Now, this is from The Secret Destiny of America. And it's called The Unknown Man Who Designed Our Flag. Our flag was worked out in elements of design that provided for gradual modification in the future as the national destiny increased. It was a learned stranger, added by some seeming accident to the committee appointed by the Colonial Congress in 1775, who had the foresight to provide the area for the stars in subsequent substitution for the British Union Jack. The design was adopted by General Washington. There is no record that the committee ever made a report to Congress. According to the rules laid down by Francis Bacon for works published under the authority of the Society of Unknown Philosophers, each book must be so marked as to be readily recognizable. The book that tells us of the presence of the unknown designer ends with a quotation from Bacon. Francis Bacon, ladies and gentlemen, is Shakespeare, William Shakespeare. I believe he's also the writer of the King James Bible, because it's his jargon. Now, if I read about this book in the future, we shall find out more about Francis Bacon. But Francis Bacon called America, it was to be an experiment, and he called it the New Atlantis. There was a book that was published after his death that he had written, and it's called The New Atlantis. Robert Allen Campbell, in 1890, published a little book, Our Flag, or The Evolution of the Stars and Stripes. Diligent research fails to uncover any data about Mr. Campbell. He states in his preface that the work is a compilation of facts and dates from official sources, larger works, occasional pamphlets and addresses upon this and collateral subjects, and is meant, therefore, for the perusal of those who have not the time, opportunity, or disposition for a more extended study in this line of research. Then he refers specifically to the chapter of interest to our present consideration. That part of his sketch which treats of dire proceedings of the Congressional Committee in relation to the colonial flag and of the unofficial consideration by a few of our revolutionary statesmen and heroes in regard to the flag of the 13 United States, immediately preceding its adoption by Congress, has not heretofore been published. This last statement makes it extremely difficult to trace Mr. Campbell's source of information. We are forced to the conclusion that the story must have been given to him by word of mouth. The book itself must have been printed in a very small edition, for it has become exceedingly scarce and is seldom, if ever, offered for sale. On those rare occasions when copies have changed hands, the book commands a price far in excess of usual works in this field. According to the rules laid down by Sir Francis Bacon for works published under the authority of the Society of Unknown Philosophers, each book must be marked in some peculiar way, easily recognizable by the informed, but not conspicuous to those who are not party to the plan. All of the older writings are so marked, either with ciphers, curious headpieces, vignettes, colophons, designs, symbols, figures, or signatures. It is possible that the book, Our Flag, carries such a signature, for it ends with the following quotation: "Out of monuments, names, words, proverbs, private records, and evidences, fragments of stories, passages and books, and the like, we save and recover somewhat from the deluge of time." Bacon. That was a quote from Bacon. One thing is certain. Robert Allen Campbell has concluded his treatise with a curiously meaningful passage from the writings of the man responsible for the broad program of colonization in the Western world that made possible the creation of the United States of America. The selection of Bacon's words to conclude the book may be accident, and it may be intent. But in the light of the text and the air of mystery which covers the history of the writing and the life of the author, it appears more than possible that intent is the answer. Chapter 2 of Our Flag is entitled The Colonial Flag. This, in substance, is what it says. In the fall of 1775, the Colonial Congress, in session at Philadelphia, appointed Messrs. Franklin, Lynch, and Harrison as a committee to consider and recommend a design for the colonial flag. General Washington was then in camp at Cambridge, Massachusetts, and the committee went there to consult with him. While at Cambridge, the committee men were entertained by a patriotic and well-to-do citizen. At that time, the best room in this gentleman's residence was temporarily occupied by a peculiar old gentleman, as there was only one other guest room. Messrs. Lynch and Harrison were given the unoccupied room, and Dr. Franklin shared apartments with the old gentleman. Nothing is known about this mysterious old man except that he was referred to as the professor. His name is not preserved. He was beyond 70 years of age, but apparently in the prime of his life. He ate no flesh, fish, nor fowl, or any green things, and drank no liquor, wine, or ale. His diet consisted of cereals, well-ripened fruit, nuts, tea, and such sweets as honey and molasses. He was well-educated, highly cultured, of extensive as well as varied information, and very studious. He spent most of his time pondering over rare books and ancient manuscripts, which he seemed to be deciphering, translating, or rewriting. These he kept carefully locked up in a heavy iron-bound chest and never showed them to any person. He was liberal, but in no ways lavish with his money, but was well supplied with all that he needed. The professor was a staunch advocate of democracy, and his favorite statement was, We demand no more than our just due. We will accept and be satisfied with nothing less than we demand. On the eve of their arrival, December 13th, the committee men dined with their host and hostess, also General Washington and the professor. The professor was introduced to the visitors without his name being given, and his ease, grace, and dignity during the introduction is especially noted. When Benjamin Franklin was presented, he stepped forward and extended his hand, which the professor heartily accepted. As their eyes met, there was an instantaneous, a very apparent, and mutually gratified recognition. After dinner, Washington and the committee men exchanged a few words in undertone, and then Dr. Franklin arose, saying in substance, "As the chairman of this committee, speaking for my associates, and with their consent, and with the approval of General Washington, I respectfully invite the professor to meet with the committee as one of its members, and we, each one, personally and urgently, request him to accept the responsibility and to give us, and the American colonies, the benefit of his presence and his counsel." After graciously accepting the invitation, the professor made his first recommendation. He pointed out that the committee now consisted of six persons, General Washington and the host being honorary members. Six was not the auspicious number, and as none of the members could be spared, let the hostess be included so that the number could be increased to seven. This suggestion was unanimously accepted, and the hostess became the secretary of the committee. The committee met the following evening in the professor's room. General Washington opened up the proceedings by asking Dr. Franklin for his recommendations. Franklin replied by requesting that the entire committee listen to the words of his newfound, abundantly honored friend, the professor, who had definite suggestions to make. After a preamble, the professor made the following extraordinary remarks. "The sun of our political air, like the sun in the heavens, is very low in the horizon, just now approaching winter in the winter solstice, which it shall reach very soon. But the sun rises from his grave." Here it is, ladies and gentlemen. You're hearing this nonsense here. You know where this man's coming from right here. The sun dies, you know what I mean? In other words, this is supposed to be like Jesus dies and then he's resurrected after being 3 days in the earth, you see. But this is how they liken the sun to this. When the winter solstice comes along, the sun comes to a point and it stops. It dies. It doesn't move for 3 days. And then it begins on again, like it's resurrected. You see? So, let me continue. "But as the sun rises from his grave in Capricorn, mounts toward his resurrection in Aries, and passes onward and upward to his glorious culmination into Cancer, so will our political sun rise and continue to increase in power, in light, and in glory." Pay attention to the words. "And the exalted sun of summer will not have gained his full strength of heat and power in the starry lion until our colonial sun will be, in its glorious exaltation, demanding a place in the governmental firmaments alongside of, coordinate with, and in no wise subordinate to, any other sun of any other nation upon earth." The professor went on to point out that the flag which he recommended would be subject to change in the future as the national destiny increased. This change, however, should not require a complete redesigning, but a process of gradual modification. To make it announce and represent the new nation, which is already gestating in the womb of time, and which will come to birth, and that not prematurely, but fully developed and ready for a change into independent life, before the sun in its next summer's strength ripens our next harvest. Which, of course, July 4th is what he's talking about. So this country would come into fruition before the next July 4th. This being 1775. The design finally submitted consisted of a field of 13 alternate red and white stripes. And in the area which now contains the stars was the British Union Jack. The area containing the Union Jack was the one suitable for modification. The design was formally and unanimously accepted, and the flag was adopted by General Washington as the recognized standard of the Colonial Army and Navy. There is no record of any report being made by this committee to Congress. On January 2nd, 1776, at Cambridge, in the presence of the Army, General Washington, with his own hands, raised the newly made flag on a tall and specially prepared pine tree Liberty pole. The British Army at Charleston Heights could see the flag clearly. After inspecting it with their field glasses, the British officers ordered a salute of 13 cheers, following by a regular official salute of 13 guns in honor of the new standard. It appears, therefore, that the colonial flag was as pleasing to the British as it was to the colonies. It's easy to see why Mr. Campbell's story has received very little recorded recognition. It belongs among those shadowy and mysterious happenings which influence or change the course of an empire, but will ever find little favor with prosaic and unimaginative historians. Well, I'm very interested in it. I think it's very, very interesting. Now, we will not finish this, of course, but this is, we'll continue next week, and I'll do the same format. I'll discuss some subjects, and we'll go through this book. This part is called Thomas Paine and the Rights of Man. The crusading of Thomas Paine definitely advanced for Americans that secret destiny by which all people shall be free and equal. There is little doubt that he assisted Jefferson in writing the Declaration of Independence. Paine emphasized the necessity of separating the spheres of church and state in government, preached religious tolerance, in a day when the spirit of persecution was still strong, attacked the special privileges of the aristocracy. Only by thousands of years of conditioning can mankind be brought to the perfectionist state envisioned by this American patriot. Of Thomas Paine, it has been said that he did more to win the independence of the colonies with his pen than George Washington accomplished with his sword. Only complete reorganization of government, religion, and education would bring us even today to the perfectionist state Tom Paine envisioned. The stormy petrel of revolutionary days in America and France was Thomas Paine, son of a hard-working Quaker who made his living cutting barrel staves. Young Thomas's formal education ended in grammar school. He practiced his father's trade for a time before turning his mind to politics and the social problems of his time. Benjamin Franklin inspired Thomas Paine to become a champion of human rights. Their first meeting took place in England, and at Franklin's suggestion, Paine came to America and entered into the publishing business. English-born, he became an outstanding champion in the cause of freedom for the colonies. His writings so fanned the flame of patriotism that it has been said of him that he did more to win the independence of the colonies with his pen than George Washington accomplished with his sword. There is little doubt that Thomas Paine assisted Jefferson in writing the Declaration of Independence. Present research even points to the probability that he composed the entire document, then submitted it to Jefferson for editing and revision. The references in the Declaration of Independence to the laws of nature and nature's God especially reflect Paine's theological convictions. See, that's not good, nature's God. Because nature's God is Pan. But I will say one thing. That when a man is declaring his rights, human rights, to me that means he was not only declaring them to George, King George, but he was declaring them to Yahweh, that he has rights. You see? Notice that this is not a document ascribing to the laws of Yahweh, but it has everything to do with the rights of man. Now, that's just something I want you to think about. Paine held several offices in the Continental government during the period of the Revolutionary War, and in 1789 returned to Europe. 3 years later, he published his Rights of Man. Although the truths contained in the essay were never successfully controverted, the book caused repercussions that forced him to leave England to escape trial for treason. He sought refuge in France. Almost immediately, he became involved in the French Revolution as a staunch supporter of the Revolutionary Party. He boldly advocated the perpetual banishment of Louis the 16th, but was opposed to the execution of the king. His tolerant views on this subject must have alienated the terrorists, for Robespierre caused him to be imprisoned under the sentence of death by the guillotine. Robespierre is a Jew, by the way. And the revolution, why he's involved in the revolution, is because of Freemasonry. Understand that. Robespierre is a Freemason. So even though they put him in jail, that doesn't mean. You see, he went to what he's used to being in, and that's Freemasonry. Just because it didn't work out and he met a man that didn't like him so and didn't like his ideas doesn't mean that he wasn't a Freemason. It was just before this imprisonment that he published the first part of his immortal book, Age of Reason. He wrote the second part during the 10 months of his incarceration. Paine's escape from death in France was by one of those unforeseen circumstances which so often have changed the course of history. Robespierre fell from power. His successors restored Paine to his seat in the Revolutionary Convention. When things in France had settled down to the sober process of setting up permanent government, Paine turned his attention to George Washington, whom he bitterly attacked, thus losing much of his popularity in America. Paine returned to the United States in 1802 after closing years were comparatively uneventful. He died in 1809. 10 years later, his body was sent back to England to be reinterred in his native earth. Thomas Paine was a free thinker, a radical pamphleteer. It was his misfortune to be born out of time. Yet his very birth and energy of his nature helped to change the face of time. He attacked the corruption of the British government with such honesty and skill that he was the most feared man in England. Then, with the simple conviction of a Quaker deist, he threw the power of his written word against the religious corruption that burdened the peoples of Europe and interfered with the social progress of mankind. In the Age of Reason, Paine emphasized the necessity of separating the spheres of church and state, looking at both institutions in their practical state of corruption rather than in their ideal state of mutual integrity. He held a broad view of religion in general, believing that all faiths were naturally good and were necessary to the spirit of security and humanity. Such broadness was out of season, and it made him numerous enemies among those holding fanatical convictions. It was dangerous to preach religious tolerance in his day, when the spirit of persecution was still strong. See, I want to tell you something about this toleration that we're talking about, religious toleration. You see, would Yahweh allow Satanism to be a religion in America? No. Would the Declaration of Independence allow it? Yes. See, there's a problem there. You're talking about a man who may be somewhat honest and, on a general good way of thinking, but he's not Yahweh's man. So what I mean by that is the Constitution allows things that Yahweh wouldn't allow. See, our Constitution supposedly has now allowed the rights of gay marriage. Would the laws of Yahweh allow that? No. So why would you want to go back to the Constitution and reinstitute the Constitution? We need to reinstitute Yahweh's laws. Would the Constitution allow Satanists and all kinds of other kinds of crazy religions, Satanism and all kinds of crazy religions, to be in the military? Yes. Would Yahweh? Absolutely not. Would the Constitution? See, the Constitution is what got us where we are today. It's not that I'm saying that it's a horrific document. There are protections in the Constitution, and I'm not saying that at all, but I'm saying Yahweh's law is better. It's more succinct. It's clearer. You see? So the Constitution is what allowed us to have the things that have occurred, this bogus, horrible democracy that these secret societies and Jews so love. But Yahweh wouldn't allow that, you understand? Yahweh's law does not need to be transmuted. It does not need to be changed. It's perfect as it is, as he gave it. So there's all kinds of patriots across America that want to reinstitute the Constitution. We have gun rights with Yahweh. Second Amendment or no Second Amendment. Every person on earth has a right to defend themselves. Period. So the Constitution, you see, when you talk about the rights of man, see, we don't want to have homosexuals in our country. We don't want Jews in our country. But now the rights of the homosexual supersedes what we want. That's what human rights does for you, ladies and gentlemen. That's why when I say that we were declaring our human rights, see, we'll find out next week here when I go over this. You'll find out that there was a special person that showed up just before the signing and encouraged the signing of the Declaration of Independence, almost demanded it. And you'll find that we were better to go by Yahweh's law, and we wouldn't have ended up where we're at right now if we obeyed Yahweh's law. See, let me give you an example of Yahweh's law. As a farmer, you farm for 6 years, and you rest the land on the seventh year. So you know that on the seventh year that you're going to be resting the land, and you're not only resting the land, but your temple, you're resting your temple on the seventh year, your body. So you would save enough in order to live that year. You'd save enough during the 6 years so that you would have enough to live for the seventh year. That way there, the land would actually be able to heal a little bit and rest a little bit, and then it would produce much better crops. But if you work the year, if you work the land 7 years and you keep going and you work it perpetually and you never rest the land, now the crops have problems because the land has problems. As you need to rest and sleep, the land needs to rest and sleep. Another law of Yahweh's would be the same principle in the sea. Why are we running out of fish? Because you didn't obey Yahweh. Why are we running out of seafood? This is a deliberate thing done by the Jew, because they fish it 7 years perpetually, 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 perpetually. You see, use your brain. If you fished for 6 years and you knew you were off on the seventh year, it's the same principle as farming. On the seventh year, the sea could replenish itself. But if you do not obey Yahweh's law and you fish it perpetually, it will never have the time to replenish itself fully. Don't you see Yahweh's wisdom there? What is wrong with the people of this world? If we obeyed Yahweh's laws, everything would be simply better. But we know that the Jew wants to institute, that the Jew is trying to cause food shortages. I'll give you another example of that right now. Okay. They make it in Massachusetts here. They can seed the clouds and make it rain and 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 rain. But yet in California, there's a heavy-duty drought. You don't think that they could seed the clouds down there and make it rain and rain and rain? Well, of course they could. They don't want to, ladies and gentlemen. It's just as simple as that. You understand? This is just pure common sense. So Yahweh's law is superior to the Constitution. Yahweh's law is superior to anyone's law worldwide. Yahweh's law would bring the peace to the land, rest to all of us, and everything that the Jew he claims that the UN is going to bring peace by taking away our arms and by stopping wars, yet it has just been the opposite. There's been more wars during the UN's existence than there was ever before. Can't you see Yahweh's wisdom? And it's in opposition to the Jew. The Jew has no wisdom. And the Jew has proven himself to be not that smart as he keeps claiming he is. You can see that by what's going on in our present time in the world. It's all folding in on him. The New World Order is a failure. The Jew is a failure. But Yahweh's laws would make us winners. There would be no drought. There would be no food shortage. There would be no immigration. There would be virtually no crime in the white countries. Because most of the crime in the white countries is done by people that aren't from our country. And if you don't believe that, go on a hunt and find out if I'm telling you the truth. I challenge you. Now, let me give you a little word of advice. They have a thing, and it's Jewish run, and it's called Wikipedia. I would suggest, you know, you can go there and you can find some facts, and it's easy to find some things there. But the thing is anybody can write anything there. So I would not use Wikipedia as one of your sources, so to speak, or not one that you trust implicitly. Just a word of caution. We must begin to use common sense. I said it before, I'll say it again. Benjamin Franklin said the problem with common sense is that common sense is not that common. And I always say after that, if it wasn't common in his time, how common do you think it is now? So human rights, we're reading about human rights in Manly P. Hall's book here. When I heard that, it all sounds good. You understand? It sounds like it's ringing the truth a little bit. But when you look deeper into human rights, now it becomes ugly. And it begins to take on wrong connotations and ugly attributes. Like I said to you, we have the right to have a Christian country. We made it that way, and we wanted to keep it that way. But now, all of a sudden, human rights of the transsexual or homosexual or Jew or Negro or whatever else supersedes our rights. Now, I don't agree that it supersedes. I don't believe in it at all. But that's the way it appears to be working in our world. You see, so human rights doesn't work because you're trampling on somebody else's right. If I was a homosexual and I have the right to be a homosexual in this country, and you have the right not to have homosexuals in your land because Yahweh does not wish it, then whose rights are more important? Certainly not the homosexual. Don't you understand how these Jews play this game? Isn't it evident to you what's going on here? You've got the ADL who is attacking Christianity, has been for many years. They should be booted out of this country. Now they make all kinds of claims. Now the Celtic cross is now a hate tool or something like that. I mean, it just gets more ridiculous and more ridiculous. Listen, if you don't like it here, Mr. ADL, you just pack up your bags and get over to your fake little land of Israel. We don't care what you think is hate or anything else. We don't want you here. We don't like you. We don't respect you. We don't respect your opinions. We don't want to hear any more from you. Get out of our country. Why do you think Abe just took off? Because he knows he's going to be chased out of here soon. You don't know that, Mr. Replacement, do you? The one that looks like a serpent. You're going to be chased out of this country very soon. I can see it coming. Can you? Keep running your mouth. If you had any common sense at all, Mr. Jew, you'd clam your mouth up right now and quit while you're so-called ahead, because we're going to crush your head. The serpent's head. And Yahweh is going to give you what you wanted all along. I don't want to hear any more from your organization. We don't want to hear from the Southern Southern Poverty Law Center, or any other of your organizations, the AIC. We don't want any more of your Jewish interests in our country. We want you to leave our country. We don't want you encroaching on any of our things. We don't want you encroaching on our Yahweh, our God. We don't want you encroaching on our stupid government. We don't want you in our businesses. You have ruined this land. You need to go away. And you will be chased by, I'm not threatening you. The Muslims will chase you out of this land. Keep bringing them in here. The Muslims will chase you out of Europe. You're leaving Europe right now. You think you're going to get away with staying here? How long till they find out where your neighborhoods are? You know, Obama was talking about putting out a database with all the racist people in this country. Well, that's every white person in this country, right? So the Muslims, what they ought to do is they ought to put out a database where all the Jews live. Then they know where they got to go. You brought them here, they're going to go get you. Your time is short, just like the time I have left in this show. Your time is very short, Mr. Jew. There's no more time for your nonsense. It's time for you to pack up and go away. Bye-bye. We didn't want you here in the first place. We still don't want you here. And don't come back. Don't come back. Aye, aye, sir. Aye, aye. Don't come back. No more calling for anything. We don't want to hear any more of your calls. AT&T just cut your account. No more calls. We're calling for you to get out of this country while you still have a chance. The Muslims are coming for you. The Muslims are coming to take you away. Away, aha. Yes. You've been listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm your host, David James. Until next time, study to show thyself approved.